Today is April 26th. We're beginning Masechet Rosh Hashanah. It has four chapters, and there is a slight chance we'll finish by Rosh Hashanah. In other words, if we have four or five or six classes before the end of June, even eight perhaps, and then we have a few classes next year during Chodesh Elul before Rosh Hashanah, we might just finish the Masechet.
Is our Mishnah class a possibility for Leil Shavuot?
Ah, okay. Why don't we talk about that at the end? Fine. Don't need it on the tape. That's a good possibility, like we did last June, the year before. This opportunity to do Masechet Rosh Hashanah, and especially the first Mishnah on Masechet Rosh Hashanah, is a special opportunity for me, because here in Dallas, I've taught the ideological and religious conclusions of this Mishnah at least 10 times in different frameworks. But I never had the opportunity to teach the foundations of the Mishnah that lead to the conclusions that I think are so fundamental for understanding the nature of Rosh Hashanah and the nature of the Jewish calendar, conclusions that I've talked about many, many times, and perhaps many of you have heard me talk about it. So now we're going to the bedrock of it and see where everything comes from. So, the Mishnah. Arba'a Grashei Shanim Hem. That's the heading. Arba'a is a number, right? Four, Rashei Shanim, Hem. Rashei Shanim is the plural of Rosh Shana. Rashei Shanim. There are four Rashei Shanim.
They're called New Year's Day.
There are four New Years.
New Year's Day.
Bechad v'Nisan, Rosh Hashana l'Amlachim v'L'Regalim. On the first of Nisan, and by the way, the word Nisan, like all of the other names of the Jewish months, are not actually Hebrew at all. They are Babylonian names. The Gemara says that these names came up with us from Babylon exile when Shivat Zion was taking place. In other words, after the destruction of the first temple, we were in exile for 70 years. When we left exile from Babylonia back to Eretz Yisrael to build the second temple, the names of the months, Alu Itanu Mi Babel. The names of the months came up with us from Babel. Before that time, they weren't called by these names, and we'll see what they were called. Bechad v'Nisan, the first of Nisan, Rosh Hashanah, it's a Rosh Hashanah for Le. For what? For Milachim and for Regalim. For kings and for what are Regalim?
Holidays.
Holidays, right? Shloshet Regalim, the three pilgrimage holidays. Regalim meaning feet, and these are holidays of feet, of pilgrimage. Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Bechad Belul, Rosh Hashanah, Lamasal Behema. The first of the month of Elul, which of course is 1 month before Tishrei, is a Rosh Hashanah for Ma'asar Behema. So the word Ma'asar, the root is Eser. What is Eser?
A tenth.
Ten. Ten. And Ma'asar is a tenth. It's the tithe of Behema. Of what?
Animals.
Of animals. Rabbi El Azav, Rabbi Shimon Amrim, Bechad B'Tishrei. So these two rabbis dissent, and they say, on the first of Tishrei. But that's a dangling sentence. It's not a sentence. What do you mean? What is on Echad B'Tishrei?
Rosh Hashanah
for
Ma'asar
Behema. In other words, the full sentence of Rabbi Zohar, Rabbi Shimon, would be that Echad B'Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah L'Ma'asar Behema. There's a machloket. When the Rosh Hashanah for Ma'asar Behema is. Is it the first of Elul or a month later, the first of Tishrei? And then the Mishnah goes on with the third Rosh Hashanah. Bechad B'Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah Lashanim V'Lashmitin V'Liyovlot L'Nitiyah V'Liyirakot. So this Rosh Hashanah for many things. Number one, for Shanim, for years. And for Shmitin, which is the plural of what word? Of Shemitah, for the seventh year. L'Yovlot, the plural of Yovel, the Jubilee year, once every 50 years. And it's also Shana for Nitiyah, for planting, and for Yerakot. What are Yerakot?
Vegetables.
We didn't have any vegetables today. And then the Mishnah gives us a fourth Rosh Hashanah. Bechad Bishvat Rosh Hashanah La'ilan. Right, the first of Shvat is Rosh Hashanah for Ilan,
trees.
For trees. And that is Kedivrei Beit Shammai, like the words of Beit Shammai. But Beit Hillel Omrim B'chamisha Asar Bo. And the 15th bow, what is bow?
Of
Shvat, right, bow in it, referring to Shvat.
Yeah.
So altogether we have four Rosh Hashanim. The first is the first of Nisan, and that's for kings and holidays, whatever that means. And the second one is on the first of Elul, although some say it's the first of Tishrei, and that's for the tithing of the animals. And then there's a third Rosh Hashanah on the first of Tishrei, for years and for Shemitah and for Jubilees and for planting and for vegetables. And then the fourth one is in Shvat. Some say the first of Shvat and some say the 15th of Shvat. And this one is for Ilan, for trees. So we have to figure out what's going on here. There's a lot to figure out. So here we go.
Can I ask a simplistic kind of question? So the rabbis that dispute and say it's Tishrei, not Elul, they would say there's just three Rosh Hashanah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Took the words right out of my mouth.
Right.
Would you restate the four one more? Just
of course. Dates or the purposes?
No, just the category, the purposes, not the dates.
The first...
Kings and holidays.
The first one is kings and holidays.
Yes.
The second one is tithing of animals.
Tithing of animals, okay.
The third one is for years and for Shemitah. And for jubilees, and for planting, and for vegetables.
Years, Shemitah, planting, and vegetables.
You left out Yovel, jubilee.
Oh, yes.
And the last one is for trees.
Thank you.
So the first question that I asked on the sheet that I gave out is a question prior to the Mishnah. What is the a priori difficulty in setting a Rosh Hashanah? Let's just think, what is it? What is a Rosh Hashanah? What is it?
Define. What is the beginning of a year?
Yeah. Right, because a year is cyclical, you know, right. Obviously.
Is it a calendar thing, or is it related to something else that happens yearly cycles?
Right. Is there any physical basis to set a Rosh Hashanah, or is it simply a construct of human culture?
Well, astronomically, there's a basis, we know, because the...
Well, no, there's not. In other words, astronomically, there might be a basis for the length of a year, but not for the point at which a year begins and ends, because astronomically, it doesn't. It just goes on.
Yeah.
But it's cyclical, right?
So the whole concept of Rosh Hashanah would really not seem to be anything but a construct of human society.
Logic, habit might say you pick a solstice. As time to start a solar year, the sun is at its longest day, the sun is at its shortest day.
That could be.
It's kind of common good feeling sense. This past week, was it Rabbi Pearl? Somebody said this past week, the Christian calendar really starts January 1st. Why? It's Christ's bris. That was the logic behind that.
Again, that would be, again, a construct of human culture, something that human beings did at a certain point in time.
But here we have, we're arguing all over the map.
If I can add a little incident to your point, I was walking home from Shul, actually to Emily's house, during Pesach. There was a man in a pickup truck. He was about to leave. I said, oh, excuse me. I waved good morning. Could I ask you a question? Well, I'm reading here in the Bible, and it says the Passover is supposed to be in the first month. Uh-huh. So why isn't it in January?
Uh-huh. You should have come back.
I am completely serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I said to him, you know, when a year starts, it's arbitrary. Think about it. There's nothing that makes the year start.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And when is the first month? It's hard to know. And we have, it says later that it's Passover has to be in the springtime, so we make it in the springtime month.
Just waiting for a Jew to walk by. Yeah.
he was leaving, and he sees us all the time. He lives there.
Oh, okay.
And he sees that, he knows, you know, that we're always walking there, and he stopped. It was exactly this point.
So there's something arbitrary about it. That's the point.
To come to an oral law class.
Yeah.
Details.
Right.
But since it's cyclical, I would think that a certain time should be chosen to understand the cycle. But the choice of that would seem arbitrary.
Well, no,
that's the point. The choice of the beginning is arbitrary.
What's consistent?
Right.
But what's consistent, gentlemen, in all this is, except for the machloket on whether it's b'chamisha asar or not. What's consistent, it is at the beginning of a lunar month, and all the others.
That's a very good point.
Oh, except for
Beit Hillel on the 4th.
Right. You could also see some natural evolution of trees throughout the year that, you know, the spring, you know, is significant.
Right.
Also with animals.
Enjoy.
Right.
To see Mr. Becker.
And if you're going to take a...
is light. Amen. And what is not studying?
Darkness.
Shalom ubracha.
And you.
But if you take the...
I was just going to say, you know, I mean, what sometimes is a heretical view of the derivation of religion is that, you know, it came from, you know, that there was a knowledgeable class that knew when it was appropriate to plant, and it was, you know, and they were aware of the cycles and could predict the season, you know, unlike the common, you know, and so they set these things, you know, and then the rest fell. But so, I mean, whether you see that as before or after, you know.
But I wanted to hear what you said earlier.
What, about the evolution? Yeah, I was...
Before Mr. Becker came, you said two things.
I was saying that in you know, they were together, that... That there's, you know, the animals have a natural evolution throughout
a
year
cycle. And
there's
a certain time of year when animals tend to give birth.
Mm-hmm.
They go into heat.
Right.
And they're pregnant.
And trees also tend to, you know, they go through a process.
Right. And, of course, there are the seasons. You took the solstice, which is apparent in the sky, but it's not apparent in the climate. Whereas the change of seasons is a matter that's apparent in the climate.
Very late, of course.
Because there are certain possibilities that precede human culture. There are certain possibilities for setting beginning and ending times. Okay. The second discussion that we should have before
beginning the Mishnah. And are at the basis of human culture.
Right.
Yeah.
Not always, but sometimes. For example, a Brit Milah is not necessarily related to a season, but other aspects of human culture might very well be. Of course.
Given us our Christian calendar, or whatever it's called.
So, after talking about how we set a Rosh Hashanah, or more than one, in the world and in the culture we live in, a second matter that I just wanted to point out here is that although it might seem strange that there are four Rosh Hashanim and not one, the truth is, in the secular world we live in America, there is certainly more than one Rosh Hashanah. I don't mean the Jewish and the American. I mean within American culture, there's more than one New Year.
Fiscal.
July 4th.
Fiscal years.
April 15th.
April 15th.
Right.
Yeah.
January 1st. I know, up north, September 1st, there's a New Year.
Yeah,
the beginning of the school. Here in the South, it's kind of a little bit problematic.
Culture,
I would say that the machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, whether the New Year for trees is on the 15th or the 1st, is similar to the machloket between the North and the South, when is the beginning of the school year, 15th of August or the 1st of September. Yeah. Okay, you guys didn't like that joke. Okay, but anyway.
The Jewish holidays usually don't matter, make a difference if they are New Year's, or three New Year's, or two New Year's. The Jewish holidays are mentioned, that the 14 days in Nisan, they mentioned the month. In Nisan we have the Korban Pesach, it tells you in the Torah when to celebrate Sukkot, and when to celebrate Shavuot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we don't really go by the year. We go by the month that it's different in our religion. We go by the month. See, the Torah mentioned the month. It makes no difference if that month is the beginning of the year, the rest of the year.
It's set in
time. As long as it's in Nisan, we know where the Jewish holiday is.
So there's something counterintuitive about why we would need to know
you
the
understand
year.
What I'm
in other words,
yeah.
Well, we have
to make no difference how many New Years we have. We go according to what the law says when our holidays start.
Okay.
Although Pesach has to be the Chag in the
spring.
Aviv, in the spring.
So it's very possible that there would be different New Years for different functions and different usages and different needs of society, whether it's the academic year, the fiscal year, the calendar year, the religious year. So now we get to the Mishnah itself.
Psychological.
Let's go through the questions and go through the Mishnah itself in order to understand what's going on. Why don't we go through the verses, actually? I think that would be the most helpful thing. I brought lots of different verses from the Torah here that will turn out to be the foundation of the Mishnah and will help us to go back and understand the Mishnah. So here we go. We don't even need to open Chumashim, but you can if you want, because I brought them all for you, vocalized. The first source we want to see is Sefer Dvarim Perek Yudalef. Okay? It's right here on the sheet. Ki ha'aretz asher ata vasham el rishta, for the land which you are coming there, lerishta. What does that mean, to rishta? To inherit it. Very good, to possess it. Lo ha'aretz Mitzrayim hi. It's not like Eretz Mitzrayim. Like Moshe Rabbeinu is talking to the Israelites who left Egypt, and he's saying the land of Israel which you're going to inherit is not like the land of Mitzrayim. Asher yatzat misham, which you went forth from there. Asher tizra et za'echa vihishketa viraglecha kigan hayirak, which you sow your seed, right? Tizra et za'echa, sow your seed. Vihishkita, language of lahashkot,
water it.
And you water it, you irrigate it, biraglecha, with your feet. Kigan hayirak, like a vegetable garden. And what it means is that in the land of Mitzrayim, there is a steady, stable, and dependable water source, the Nile. And all you have to do in order to have a successful crop is to dig irrigation ditches and then to bring the water to flow in those ditches with your feet. That means one of two things. It means that you open and close the ditch to allow the water to flow and not flow simply by moving dirt with your feet. Or it might be referring to a bit more of an advanced model, which you sit at a water wheel with your feet. You pedal and you bring the water up from the Nile and the buckets pour into the ditches which you dug. In either case, it depends on your feet to bring the water to the crops. And being that the water source is dependable, your garden will always flourish.
It also strikes me as a metaphor for if you have your children, you sow your seed and you dwell in the land, you keep your feet in the land, that the water will flow. I mean, just like the Shema, you know. I mean,
it's related to the Shema.
This is,
but wait a second.
This is in Egypt. It's talking about
right. This is Egypt.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's saying if you in Egypt that happens.
Yes.
Right. And this is a contrast here.
Yeah.
Contrast between Eretz Mitzrayim and Eretz Canaan.
Uh-huh.
The next pasuk describes Eretz Canaan, which is not like Eretz Mitzrayim. V'ha'aretz asher atem uvrim sham l'rishta, and the land which you are uvrim shama, you're passing over there, l'rishta. We said l'rishta is
to possess it. Yeah.
And the vav that begins this sentence should be read as a but. But, in contrast to its Mitzrayim, the land which you are passing over there to inherit it, Eretz Harim Uvkaot. It's a land of Harim.
Mountains
and valleys.
Valleys.
And the point is that irrigation ditches don't work in a land of hills and valleys. Because although it's true that water flows down, it doesn't flow up.
Yeah.
And if you have...
The rain.
Right, you're going ahead of us. But if you have crops planted on the hillsides and the water source is in the valley, you can't use any type of water wheel or any type of ditch to bring the water to your crops. And then it says, just like Mr. Galler just read, Limtar Hashamayim Tishtemayim. for the rain of the heaven, it drinks water.
Yeah.
In other words, you can't, even if you did have a Nile, it wouldn't help because it would be in the valley and your crops are on the mountains. Therefore, you have no choice but depend on Matar HaShemayim. Mm-hmm. And then it says in the next verse, Eretz Asher Adonai Elohecha Doresh Ota, a land which the Lord your God Doresh Ota, is interested in it, inquires of it, is connected to it. Tamid Einei Adonai Elohecha Ba, always the eyes of God your Lord are Ba, are upon it. Mereshit Hashana Vadacharit Hashana, from the beginning of the year, Reshit, see that expression, Reshit Hashana, like Rosh Hashanah, until Acharit Hashanah, until the end of the year, language of Achar, Acharit, the end of the year, the after the year.
Tamid is always?
Tamid is always. So what the verses are doing, like we said, is contrasting Eretz Mitzrayim and Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Mitzrayim has a very, very stable water source, and has an easy way to get the water from the water source to the crops, and therefore the life you have there is one of basic security and stability, and you could basically know what's happening tomorrow. You can look after your family pretty well. You can have a certain assurance that things are going to go well as long as you work hard and do what has to be done. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, you have to depend on Matar HaShemayim, which by its very nature is not dependable. And in verse Yud Bet, the last verse we read, the 12th verse, when it says that God is concerned with the land, his eyes are always upon it, what it basically means is that you have to look to God for your sustenance because you're looking to the rain, and the rain is undependable.
Right.
The assumption, theology, being that the rain comes from God. Now, what's important here for us is the last few words. From the beginning of the year to the end of the year, it says that you have to depend on rain, the flow from the heaven. God is always interested in the land. His eyes are upon it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. That expression, beginning of the year to the end of the year, Reshit Hashana, to the end of the year, is found in the context of the hydrological cycle. Right? That's what we're talking about. And therefore, it's very possible that beginning of the year to the end of the year is not just a metaphor, but it's referring to the hydrological cycle. That whenever it is that the rains begin in Eretz Yisrael, and they always begin in the same season, that's what's called Reshit Hashanah. When do the rains begin?
Tishrei.
In Tishrei. Sometimes. In other words, in the fall. If you're reading this in the context of someone who's familiar with the agricultural life of the land of Israel, it's clear to you that when the verses say, from the beginning of the year, you know that that's referring to here, to the fall, when the rains start falling. And that makes perfect sense in the context of an agrarian society. Because everyone lives the natural cycle of the land. When the rains fall in the fall, that's when the year begins, because of the following. The rains do not fall in the summer. June, July, August, everything is parched. When the rains begin falling, everything literally comes to life. Everything becomes green in a few days. And the land is reborn. And then you're ready to plow, because the land is softened by the rain. You're plowing, and then a few weeks later you're planting, and things start as the rains are coming in January and February. Things are sprouting, and you have the barley coming up in March, and you have the wheat in April, and you're harvesting it, and then you have the buds on the trees in May and June, and you begin harvesting everything from the trees after you harvested the barley and the wheat. And as you're harvesting in May and June and July, the rains are no longer falling. As you take the crops from the field and you take the fruit from the tree, everything is becoming barren and brown. You get to July and August, the end of the year, and you experience it as the end of the year because the cisterns are almost empty. And you can barely scrape out the last drops of water to give something to drink to your family and to your kids. And when the rains finally fall again in the fall, Baruch Hashem, the earth is reborn.
Huh.
So clearly, as far as the experience of someone who lives in the land 5,000 years ago and 4,000 years ago and 1,000 years ago and even 50 years ago, up to 50 years ago, you experienced this, that the Reshit HaShanah is in the fall. And that's why the Mishnah can say, in the third new year, it said that Ahad B'Tishrei Rosh HaShanah LaShanim. The first of Tishrei is the beginning of the year for Shanim, for years. The year begins in Tishrei, and that's based on the verses we just saw in Sefer Dvarim.
Parshat Noach, when did we land Teva on Ararat? We landed exactly the point is, we know exactly what month it landed, the seventh month. Now, that's at the end of heavy rains. Is that the same rains as the hydrological cycle? It's landed, nevertheless, on the seventh, from the seventh month. When is the first month then?
It's hard to know there which how it's counting. Because as we're about to see, there are different counting cycles, right? But that's a very good thing to investigate. I think in the Book of Jubilees, it gives you a full, consistent opinion of how to work out those years, but that's not my field.
Finish what you were saying, because I thought it very interesting. You were talking about, you know, how the different things, you know, grew and, you know, were harvested. And then when the rain started again in what we could call the fall here, you know, when the rain started again, then the gourds and those things would come quickly for in time for, because I'm always curious, you know, how, you know, the Sukkot is the harvest festival, but we're harvesting all these other crops in the spring, but then after the summer the rains come again and quickly these other things
No. The first crop to be harvested is the barley in March and April.
March and April, yes.
The second crop is the wheat about 7 weeks later. Mm-hmm. And then you have the dates and the figs in May and June and July. You have the grapes and the pomegranates, July, August, and then everything is finished, and the Hag HaAsif, the holiday of the ingathering, Sukkot, is the final celebration of the harvest that went on for 6 months, beginning with the barley in March and April. And everything is in by this season, that it does not include the vegetables. The Hag HaSif, the holiday of ingathering, doesn't include the vegetables. The vegetables are, remember, there weren't too many vegetables in those days, but you do have gourds, like you said. They are planted in September and October with the first rains. And I'm not exactly sure when they're harvested. I actually never thought about that.
So Sukkot is really sort of like, it's the recognition of the whole preceding harvest seasons, multiple of the different crops, and it's just the end of that time, and now we're ready to rest until the rains come again.
Yeah, that's a different understanding that I have always pictured it as. Is, you know, you're putting the booth out there while you're harvesting. You know, I mean, one of the ideas of the booth is that you live in it while you're harvesting out in the field. So I always pictured it. While you're harvesting, but it being a culmination of all that harvesting.
But you're both right. I mean, it's the very, very end of the grape harvest when you're finished with your booth in the field.
Right. Yeah. No, I wasn't saying anything different.
Okay, so now, let's see the next source, which is Sefer Shmot, Perek Chaf Gimel. And we're reading this source, Perek Chaf Gimel, for two different points that are made in these verses. Shalosh regalim tachogli bashana. Three pilgrimage festivals celebrate for me in the year. Brooks, you have the place?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll make sure. Et chag matzot tishmor shivat yamim. Tochal matzot. Kasher tziviticha. Right, the holiday of matzot, keep. 7 days eat matzah. as I commanded you, l'moed chodesh aviv, at the time, at the moed of chodesh aviv, the month of spring, kivo yatzata mimitzrayim, because in it you went of Mitzrayim, velo yira'u fanai reikam, and my face will not be seen empty-handed. In other words, when you come up for the pilgrimage festival of Pesach, bring a gift for God. Don't appear before God empty-handed. V'chag ha-katsir bikurei ma'asecha, and the holiday of harvesting, bikurei, the first fruits of ma'asecha, of your deeds, asher tizra b'sadeh, that's the holiday of Shavuot. V'chag ha-asif, and the holiday of ingathering, bitzeit hashana. That's the expression we want to emphasize. That Sukkot, the holiday called Chag HaSif, when is it? Bitzeit hashana. It's at the end of the year. Baspecha et ma'asecha min hasadeh, in your collecting your deeds from the field. Now, before I say something more about that expression, Seit HaShanah, that's Sukkot, meaning the fall, is called the end of the year, I want to go on to the next set of sources. And we'll see the next set of sources, which is also from Sefer Shemot. We have a parallel to what we just read. In other words, this list of three holidays, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, is found both in Shemot Chaf Gimel, chapter 23, and in Shemot Lamed Dalet, chapter 34. So I'm going to read chapter 34 in order to get to one expression, the expression that's the parallel of Seit HaShanah. And actually, to make it easier, let's just read that expression. So it's in Sefer Shemot Perek Lamed Dalet, and I'm looking at verse Chafbet. Verse Chafbet. It gave us the three holidays, Chag HaMatzot and Chag HaShavuot, which is the Chag of Bikurei Ma'asecha, and then, let's read it, Chafbet. Chag Shavuot Taselacha, a holiday of weeks you should make for yourself, write that, we know. Bikurei Ketzir Chitim, for the first, the Bikurei, of the harvesting of the Chitim, what is Chitim?
Wheat.
Of wheat. V'chag Ha'asif, and the holiday of the ingathering. And when is this holiday? Tikufat Hashanah. In other words, whereas in Shemot Chaf Gimel it said that the Chag HaSif is at Seit HaShanah, here the expression is Tikufat HaShanah. So these two expressions, Seit HaShanah and Tikufat HaShanah, are parallels. They're synonyms. So what is Tikufat HaShanah?
The period of the year. In other words, whenever I would think it means whenever the natural time of the gathering is.
Okay.
It doesn't give a specific...
But a little bit more we want to emphasize, the word tikufa, from a root that we all know.
Hakafa.
Uh-huh. What are hakafot and simchat Torah?
Circle.
Right.
Circle.
Circuits.
It means cyclical.
Circuits. So tikufat hashanah means the cycling of the year. So how could the expression cycling of the year be a parallel for the expression seit hashanah? What's the connection between a cycling of a year and the end of a year? Is it the same thing? Because the end and the beginning in a cycle at the same point. So Tseit HaShanah and Tekufat HaShanah are parallel synonymous expressions.
Right.
So this is kind of recognizing what Mr. Galler was saying, is that, you know, or what we were all saying at the beginning, that there's no real, you know, beginning or ending. It's just, you know, going around the sun. It's just a cycle. So
wherever you decide is the beginning is also the end.
The end. Yes.
Wherever you decide is the end is also the beginning.
Yes.
With just a hair's breadth between them.
That's the same as they always say, the Kenisa Yerushalayim or Yetzia Yerushalayim, it's the same place.
Right. The one city in the world, you have to go in and come out of it in the same place. Okay, so the point is that we now have a double source for the idea that the fall is the cycling point. First we learned in Sefer Dvarim, Perek Yud Aleph, that the fall is called Reshit HaShanah, the beginning of the year, which is the biblical source for the expression Rosh HaShanah, right? Reshit HaShanah, that we learned in the first set of sources we just looked at. And then we learned in Sefer Shemot now that the fall, the time of Sukkot, is called the Tikufat HaShanah. It's called the cycling of the year. It's called the end. It's also the beginning. It's the cycling of the year. So we have two different biblical sources that tell us that the fall is the beginning of the end. Okay? And that supports, of course, which of the four Rosh Hashanim in our Mishnah?
Tishrei,
obviously. That's Tishrei, and that's why the Mishnah says that Tishrei is the Rosh Hashanah for Shanim, because that's when the Shana cycle is renewed, and as we explained, it's based on the agricultural, natural experience of anyone who lives in the land, that the beginning of the rainy season is the end and then the beginning of the year. However, there's an inherent tension in both of these sets of verses from Sefer Shemot, because if it's true that the beginning of the end point is the month of Tishrei, then why isn't Sukkot listed as the first holiday? Mm-hmm. Look again, let's read it again. Shalosh regalim amin shmot perek chaf gimel. Shalosh regalim tachogli bashana. Three regalim celebrate for me in the year. Et Hagamatzot Tishmor, first Hagamatzot, and then verse Tetzayin Hagakatsir, the holiday of the harvest, which we said is Shavuot, and then at the end of verse Tetzayin, it says, the middle of the verse, I'm sorry, the Chag Hasif, and the holiday of the ingathering. So what we find is the following. Although the fall is the cycling point, it's the beginning of the end, for some strange reason, the holidays are not listed in the order that they should be vis-a-vis the agricultural, natural, hydrological cycle that's called the beginning of the end for years. Which indicates to us the fact that there's at least a double system for counting time in the Torah. In some sense, the fall is the beginning, but in another sense, the spring is the beginning. Because Pesach listed as the first holiday. You hear what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a further proof for the fact that Pesach, in other words, the spring, is seen as a beginning, is, if we're skipping down now, to the last three Hebrew lines on the page. Sefer Vayikra, Perek Chaf Gimel. Which says, Ela Moadei Adonai Mikra'e Kodesh Asher Tikru Otam B'Moadam. These are the appointed times of God, Mikra'e Kodesh, holy callings, Asher Tikru Otam, which you should call, which you should designate B'Moadam, at their appointed time. B'Chodesh HaRishon B'Arba'a Asar L'Chodesh B'in Arba'im Pesach Ladonai. Translation of verse Hey, verse 5. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, in the afternoon, is Pesach. What month is Pesach in?
Chodesh HaRishon.
Chodesh HaRishon.
No.
That doesn't make sense. Shouldn't be the seventh month? If we begin in the fall, then we get to the spring. That's the seventh month.
Yeah.
Rather what? In some sense, the spring is the beginning. In addition to the fact that in some sense the fall is the beginning, right? So now we have to ask ourselves the following question. If we already saw in the biblical verses that this fall is the beginning because of the hydrological natural cycle, we saw that in a number of different sources, on what basis would the Torah turn around and say that in an additional sense the spring is also the beginning as far as the counting of the holidays? That Pesach is the first month, and it's the first holiday listed in the cycle, and it gives you Shavuot, then it gives you Sukkot. So now I have to find the reason why there would be a second way of counting time that begins not in the fall, but in the spring. And the answer to my question, what's the source of this, is obvious to everyone in the room.
It's historical.
It's historical.
Yeah.
It's the birth of Am Yisrael.
Right.
Which brings us now to Sefer Shemot Perek Yud Bet.
But then this all is in the context of Am Yisrael, which is far later than my favorite pasuk in Noah.
Well, why do you say that it's all in the context of Am Yisrael? The historical part that we didn't get to yet is, but the agricultural part, the natural part, the hydrological cycle precedes Am Yisrael by about 1 million years, if not 7 million, if not 10 million.
Yeah.
if not 5,769, right? This goes back to creation. But the historical part only goes back to Yitzhak Mitzrayim.
But, you know, Rosh Hashanah is not really it's not historical at all. It's not historical. And, I mean, it's given in order, you know, in an order. You know, it was revealed to us with Torah, you know, after historically we had left Egypt, you know, received the Torah. So, I mean, you could say that there was, a chronological order, not a historical order. But then you could say, well, why didn't God tell us when he was revealing it to mark it and do teshuvah, you know, at what was the beginning of the year? I mean, he could have marked it at, you know, right around Passover time. Could have told us, you know,
right.
do your teshuvah,
right.
you know,
right.
the day before Passover.
Right. So what's the answer to your question now?
So the answer to my question.
Yeah.
The answer to my question is I see a not a historical and a chronological, but there's like a spiritual year and a physical year.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah.
And which is which?
The year that begins at Pesach is the spiritual, and the one that, you know, marks, you know, the planting and everything else is our physical.
So I think that you're right, except for the fact that you could talk about two different levels of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
One that's related to the physical year and one's related to
sure.
the historical experience.
Yes.
Because if I am, whether I am Greek or Roman or Assyrian or of the ancient Amoritic nation, when I feel that the cisterns are getting low in July and I'm scraping out the last drops of water in August,
your spirit's gonna be low.
And then the rain starts falling in September, it's time to pray.
Uh-huh.
It's to pray when there was no water, to pray for rain, and it's time to thank God when the rains fall. So in other words, this what you call the physical year is certainly that,
right.
but it has a deep, deep spiritual component to it. It's a universal component as opposed
right.
to a particular
yes.
beginning that relates to a particular nation.
Although it's particular to the land of
it's
Israel.
It's particular to the experience of the
climate
of the Mediterranean basin.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, you named all those cultures. I mean, the Christian culture still, I mean, you know, Christmas, you know, you could say, you know, when it's getting dark and all, you know, are having to have these things to uplift their spirits. But we have imbued what were typically those things to maybe to pressure spirit with philosophies that we have to be the masters of ourselves and our emotions. I mean,
wait, Brooks, where?
Are we getting to it?
Yeah, let's go back to the verses.
Okay.
I want to simply read the verses we all know from Sefer Shmot Perek Yud Bet, which is right over here. Vayomer Adonai el Moshe ve'la'aron be'eretz Mitzrayim le'mor, and said God to Moshe and Aaron in the land of Mitzrayim, saying, HaChodesh hazeh lechem rosh chodeshim. This month will be for you rosh chodeshim, the first of the months. Rishon hu lechem, it's the first to you, lechodshei hashana, for the months of the year. Then it goes on to say, again, we know the context here. This is right after the ninth plague, right before the tenth plague, when the Jewish people were about to leave Egypt. Debru el kol adat Yisrael, speak to all the congregation of Yisrael emor, saying, Besor lechodesh hazeh, the tenth day of this month, yikhu lehem ish selavait, v'veit avot selavait, each man should take for himself a seh, a lamb for each household. And then he goes on to say you're supposed to slaughter it on the 14th of the month in the evening and have the Seder. And then the next day begins the holiday of Matzot. We're talking about the Yitziat Mitzrayim, we're talking about the month of Nisan. And what the verse said, verse Bet said, is this month is to be for you the beginning of months. Yeah? To who is it to be the beginning of months? To the Jewish people that experienced this historical renewal at the springtime. Now the fact that the verses had to say, this month will be for you the beginning of months, means that until now, it wasn't. Until now there was a different new year. We can assume that new year was the new year of the agricultural cycle that is common to anyone who lives in the Mediterranean basin.
Although maybe not Egypt.
That's a very good point.
Okay.
Perhaps not Egypt. It's a matter of historical controversy.
Okay.
So now we have the fact that the Torah has told us there are two different New Years. There's the agricultural, natural, hydrological New Year in the fall, and there's the historical, particular Jewish New Year in the spring. Which brings us back to what you said earlier, that according to what we're seeing, the Jewish New Year is in the spring, and what we call Rosh Hashanah is actually the universal New Year that is common to all human beings who live in the civilized world at that time in the Mediterranean basin. Okay, further verses. So then why did we see that Pesach is in the first month, which means that Rosh Hashanah is in the seventh month? Because the holidays, which are Jewish holidays, go according to the counting of Judaism, of the particular Jewish beginning, which begins in the spring. So just look, for example, at the top of the next page, the very, very first verse, when it says, "Deber el bnei Yisrael emor, b'chodesh hashvi'i v'chad l'chodesh yelechem shabbaton, zichon trua mikra kodesh." Speak to bnei Yisrael to say, the seventh month, on the first of the month, will be for you a shabbaton, zichron trua, a memory caused by blowing of the shofar. Rosh Hashanah is in the seventh month. Because as far as the holidays, which are a Jewish construct, we count from the spring. Like the verses said, that this month will be for you the beginning of months. But that doesn't, apparently, that doesn't change the fact that the fall is still, remains a new year in a certain sense. Because it's still the beginning of the agricultural cycle, which the Torah recognizes by saying that Sukkot is at Seit HaShana, the Tekufat HaShana, the cycling of the year. So it ends up, after all this long-winded explanation, it ends up that the Torah itself is telling us that there are two new years and it's not just one.
And it seems that the primacy of counting is given to the spiritual.
The primacy of counting is given to the Jewish.
Historical.
Yeah, which was what I was calling spiritual.
Yeah, but I'm not going to call it spiritual.
Okay.
Because again, the other is just the spiritual.
Well, spiritual.
Can you call it historical?
Historical as opposed to natural.
Natural.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Experiential.
And this is the basis for Chazal's Midrash that Ha'olam Nivra B'Tishrei. The world was created in Tishrei. Why? Because it is.
Universal.
Because universally you experience the world being reborn every year at Tishrei in the fall when the rains come and everything turns from brown to green.
And that explains the universalist element of Sukkot as well in terms of the Kavanot and the...
Of course, because in a certain sense, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur and Sukkot are part of one holiday, one season on a certain level. So anyway, we've learned that there are at least two Rosh Hashanim, but the problem is the Mishnah gives us four. Where do we find the others? And we don't find them in the Torah. All of these we did find in the Torah, but this one we don't find in the Torah. But we do find certain foundations in the Torah, though not the Rosh Hashanah itself. So we're looking now for this matter of Ma'asar Behemah. Right, that was the second of the Rosh Hashanim. And we could look in the sources that I brought in Sefer Vayikra, Perek Chaf Zayin, which is going to tell us about Ma'asar Behemah, but it's not going to give us a date.
So
everyone see the place?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The top of the second page, Sefer Grab Perek Chaf Zayin.
Yeah.
Pesuk Lamed Bet. The whole Ma'asar Bakar Ritzon, and every tenth of cattle and flocks, Kol Asher Ya'avor Tachat HaShevet, all that will pass under the rod, Ha'asiri, yeah, Kodesh Ladonai, the tenth will be holy to God. So there's such a thing as taking one-tenth of your flock and of your cattle and giving it to the Mikdash, but the Torah doesn't say anything, and I'm not hiding anything, about when. What do you mean when? What do you need a when for?
Yeah.
If there's a mitzvah, say it again?
When you're counting your sheep.
So count them and bring a tenth to God. What do you need a beginning of the year for?
It must have been some traditional time to make
census time.
If I'm always getting sheep, if I'm acquiring new sheep, what is it applied to? Let's say I have...
They're born.
I take 10%. When they're born.
So you're right. And in other words, 10%, one in 10. If you have 9, you can't bring 10%, because you can't bring half a sheep. Sure. So you have to bring 1 of 10.
You can never bring exactly 10. It's always going to be off.
Since Noah, we can't bring 10.
What do you mean it's going to be off?
You're never going to have exactly a tenth.
There's always going to be at the end a remainder that you don't bring from.
13 or...
So the question in Chazal is, what if you had 9 for 10 months and then you get another one? What is the cutoff point?
Right.
So you set a cutoff point. They say that for the year that ends on X date, 10 from that year, if you had 10 that year by this point, you bring 1. If you only had 9, you don't. If in that year there were only 9 births, you don't bring a 10, but in that year there were 10. So you need a cutoff point to decide, were there 10 births in that year?
You need a tax year.
It
also makes sense in terms of, you know, accounting for your productivity. I mean, they didn't have...
Okay, but...
It's saying the same thing.
Basically the same thing.
How much did you make that year?
Right, yeah.
9 or 10 or 12?
So what I want to point out is that whereas the first of Tishrei is a New Year Do'oraita, and the first of the month that we call Nisan is a New Year Do'oraita. We saw the biblical sources. The first of Elul from Masar Beima, although it's a biblical concept that you have to take a Masar Beima, the beginning point, the cutoff point, the tax year, is a construct of Rabbanan. So that's the difference here between two of the New Years on the one hand, and the third one on the other hand. Let's now look at the fourth New Year.
Can I ask a question? So where do the rabbis derive that from?
Simply from the reality of when the animals are usually born.
It has no source in
Born. So you mean, are animals born more in the fall, in Elul?
In the summer.
In the late summer.
And therefore, they tried to find a date by the time most of them are born.
And then the two opinions that make it in Tishrei makes it just...
And one says the first of Elul, one says the first of Tishrei, different of a month. What's that based upon? It's a good question. Might be based upon different parts of the land of Israel, where, you know, what the climate was, and when really was usually the end of the birthing season. But I'm just hypothesizing as far as that goes. So then we want to talk about the last of the New Years. I'm just looking at my watch to see how we're doing.
What you learn.
You're going to miss the announcement. There's no class May 17th. And there was something else we had to talk about that you had brought up. Shavuot.
Yeah. Oh, learning in Shavuot.
Yeah. So, let's look now at the last set of verses I have here, which was Sefer Vayikra, Perek Yud Tet. And we're now looking at what is this matter of the New Year for trees. And what we have is the following. V'chi tavo el ha'aretz untatem kol etz ma'achal. And when you come to the land and you plant all trees for eating, etz ma'achal, any tree, any fruit tree, v'araltem orlato. And you should orla, it's orlato. What that means is you should treat as forbidden its forbiddenness. The orla, by the way, is the same word for the foreskin of the male organ. So there's something bad about orla. You should orla the orla, not just of human beings, but of the trees. V'araltem orlato et piryo shalosh shanim yelechem arelim. 3 years the fruit is arel.
Poison.
3 years it's closed up. It's forbidden to be eaten. Lo ye'achel. It won't be eaten. So there's therefore a need halachically to define the years for trees? Do you count from when the tree was born?
And how do you define that?
How do you define that?
Yeah.
So the rabbi set a date, and that is the foundation we have here in our Mishnah for the new year for trees. There's also another matter of the new year for trees, which is the matter of Masar Perot, the tenth that you have to bring from your crop of the fruit. When is the cutoff point? Just like we said that for the animals you need a cutoff point, so you need for the trees, and we don't have to go into the rest of those details. So anyway, what we saw is there are two New Year's Doraita and two New Year's Dorabanan. There's no Doraita basis for the New Year of Trees for the 15th or the 1st of the month of Shvat. With all the information we have, I want to now look at some Talmudic sources and also something from Yosefus, and then go on to talk about the meaning of those.
Excuse me.
Okay. We're losing people quickly. You know what? Perhaps I should ask. Is anyone else going to leave? Oh, hurry up. Okay, so I want to look at this passage from the Talmud Bavli, Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Daf Bet Amud Aleph, which is right after the biblical material. Says the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Melech Sha'amad Besrim V'Tesha Ba'adar, a king that stood, and it means coronated, a king that was coronated on the 29th of the month of Adar, Kevan Shegiya Ahad Ben Nisan, since arrived the 1st of Nisan, which is the next day, Altalo Shana, has gone up for him a year. In other words, the second year of his reign begins the second day of his reign. Where's
your
cane?
Where's your cane?
So it's an extreme example.
Right. Since we said that the 1st of Nisan is the new year for kings, what that means is, as long as you reigned at least one day, and then comes the 1st of Nisan, it's considered to be the beginning of the second year of reign. And then it just goes on to say the obvious, v'imlo amad ela b'chad b'nisan, and if he didn't become coronated except on the 1st of Nisan, ein monin lo, we don't count from shana, ad shiagia Nisan Acher, until we'll arrive the next Nisan. If you're coronated this first Nisan, then you have a whole year to reign until it's, you've finished your first year. So now the question is going to be, so what? What does it matter how many years a king has reigned? The answer is going to be that, as opposed to what we do today, for many matters, they counted years from the beginning of a king's reign. As far as shtarot, as far as documents, the document was dated by the number of years into the reign of this king. Whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and the dates of documents are extremely important. The Gemara is going to talk about why they're so important, but we'll skip that part. So let's read. So says the Gemara now, a few pages later in the Masechet Rosh Hashanah, it says, "Bechad b'Tishrei Rosh Hashanah l'Shanim." On the first of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah for Shanim. That's a quote from the Mishnah. And says the Gemara, "Lemai Hilchata." To what halacha? In other words, so what? What halachic ramification does it have that the first of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah for Shanim? Amara Papalish Tarot. As Rav Papa said, for starot, for documents, for dating of documents. And it goes into a little halakhic discussion that we'll skip. And then it says in the third word of the second line, Vatanan, behold, we learned in a Mishnah, Bechad b'Nisan Rosh Hashanah Lamlachim. The first of Nisan is the beginning of the year for kings, Ramrinan, we've said, Lamai Hilchata, what's the halachic meaning? Lamarav Chista Lishtarot, for documents. In other words, you just told me that the first of Tishrei is a new year for years, which means documents, and the first of Nisan is a new year, which means documents.
For kings.
Kings is documents. So what's going on? And it says now, when the last word of the second line, Lokashya, It's not difficult. Kan l'malchei Yisrael, kan l'malchei umot olam. Here for the kings of Israel, here for the kings of the nations of the world. And which is which?
Israel, I would suspect, would be Nisan.
Right.
That's consistent with what we said before. Umot olam would be Tishrei.
Israel is Nisan.
Umot ha'olam would mean, from our perspective, that's how we would define them, because I would assume they would have another system.
So read Josephus.
Okay.
So now,
okay.
Here's Josephus, who answers your question. Moses appointed that Nisan, which is the same with, and I don't know how to pronounce the word in Greek,
Xanthicus,
should be the first month for their festivals, because he, with a capital H, brought them out of Egypt in that month. So that this month began the year as to all the solemnities they observed to the honor of God. Although he, with a capital H, preserved the original order of the months as to selling and buying and other ordinary affairs. In other words, Josephus is telling us that as far as what he knows, the world naturally sees the beginning of the year in the fall for buying and selling and all types of documents, and assumingly for kings also. But the Jewish people invented a second new year without completely overturning the original one. Mm-hmm. So when the Talmud says on the basis of the Mishnah that Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah for non-Jewish kings, it's not making it up. It's simply photographing as it's the reality in which they live, mm-hmm. more or less,
yeah.
I guess. Okay. Let's see. That we have to do, that we don't have to do, we don't have to do that. Okay. So after all that, I want to take probably just 15 minutes, perhaps even less, to talk about what this means, what this whole thing means for Judaism. So, and the way to do that is to ask a number of questions that I listed in Part C. And all of these questions are basically designed to come to the conclusion that I want to come to.
That's legitimate. There's an honest advice. Man.
Can you find any basis to divide these four New Years into two groups of two? That, of course, we've talked about.
Midrash and
the Rabbanan.
Yeah.
That the first of Tishrei and the first of Nisan are Deraita. The first of Elul and the first, or the 15th of Shvat, are Derabbanan, without any basis in the Torah. Which is the same question I asked in number two, which two have a biblical foundation? And the third question is, which two are meaningful for more than one area of life? Because we notice, and I know I'm beginning from the end of the Mishnah, the month of Shvat, the new year for trees, is the new year only for trees. Didn't say for anything else. And the first of Elul is the new year only for Masar Beima, and only for that. Whereas the first of Nisan, it says the new year for two things, for kings and for festivals. The Jewish kings count their beginning from Nisan, and the whole festival cycle begins from Nisan. So it's two things. And the same thing for the first of Tishrei. It's good for five things. For years, I guess, and for Shemitah, and for Yovel, and for planting, and for Yerk. We didn't say what they are.
Yeah.
But you see, there are five details. So it turns out that the same Rashei Shanim that are Deraita are also good for more than one category of life. And the Rashei Shanim that are Derabbanan are good for only one category of life. Is that clear?
Yeah.
And the same pattern continues with my next question. Question four. Which two are undisputed? And which two are disputed? The ones that are Derabbanan are both disputed. The ones that are Deraita are not disputed, right? The first of Tishrei and the first of Nisan are undisputed. They're the ones that are good for more than one category of life, and they're the ones that are Deraita. Whereas the first of Elul, which we said is for animals, which is Derabbanan, which is only for one thing, which is disputed, because some rabbis say it's not the first of Elul, it's the first of Tishrei for animals, which is what you said earlier, that Rosh Hashanah doesn't exist for some of the opinions. It's only three and not four. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes for the new year for the trees. Beit Shammai says the first of the month of Shvat. Hillel says the 15th. So there's a dispute there also. So it turns out that on three different levels, directed to the Rabbanan, disputed, not disputed, more than one thing or only one thing, on those three different levels you can divide the new year into two categories. The same two categories. And another level, which is question 5. Which two divide the calendar year into two symmetrical units? Because if it's 12 months, and you divide the year by Nisan and Tishrei, you divided it into two equal parts. So let me go over that with you. I should have brought my picture of the year. If we begin with Nisan, I'm just counting on my fingers. Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, Elul, Tishrei is 7. So it turns out that 1 and 7, which divide the year into two equal parts of 6 and 6, are New Year's. Right? So it turns out that those that are Deraita, those that are for more than one thing, those that are undisputed, are also the ones that divide into two equal parts. Whereas the other two New Years, which are the animals and the trees, which are Darabanan, disputed for only one area of life, they do not divide the year up equally. Because you take Elul and Shvat, it doesn't divide the year into two equal parts. Let's just do it. Elul, Tishrei, Mar Cheshvan, Kislev, Shvat.
Tevet.
Tevet Shvat. Right. Tevet Shvat. Right.
Yeah.
So I got to the sixth month instead of the seventh. If I go with Elul and Shvat, it's the first and the sixth instead of the first and the seventh. In other words, it doesn't divide the year up into equal parts. And if I put these four on the grid, it doesn't make four quarters. So on the basis of these four different levels of analysis, we come to the clear conclusion that whereas the Mishnah says there are four New Years, it would be better to say there are two sets of two. There are two sets of two. Which means that we're able to now extract from the Mishnah a prior level of meaning which might or might not be a historical core of the Mishnah, which is really, there are two New Years, Doraita, and the rabbis added two later. So if there are really only two New Years, we have a Mishnah that actually says there are two New Years, and in parenthesis says, and the rabbis added two others, there are really two New Years, so now we can go back with that information and talk about what it means that the Jewish calendar has two different New Years. And like we said earlier, one of those New Years is natural, agricultural, universal. The other is particular, historical, Jewish. One begins in fall, one begins in the spring. So now we get to what I've been saying for many, many times every Rosh Hashanah, and many of you have heard, but we just did the background to it that we've never done before, which is we're being told here that to be a Jew is to live on two different levels of experience. That although there's such a thing as Nisan, is the Jewish New Year, as Yetziat Mitzrayim, the Jewish people, although there's certainly such a thing and it's an essential part of our experience and our culture, it doesn't come to override the original experience of the natural, the agricultural, and the universal. In other words, while I become a Ben Yisrael with the Yetziat Mitzrayim and the giving of the Torah, etc., I remain a Ben Noah, or Ben Adam. Mm-hmm. And the one doesn't come to take, to override the other, but remains with these two levels of identity. And in so many different places, and so many different levels, we can always see how Jewish law and the Jewish calendar is coming to balance between two identities, and not necessarily to say that one comes to override, or supersede, or to wipe out, or to erase the other. That's basically the story. So we come out that Rosh Hashanah is not the Jewish New Year. Rosh Hashanah is the universal New Year that Jews celebrate as the only remaining nation of the ancient world. Right?
Right, that's important.
Whereas in addition to the New Year, the universal New Year that we celebrate, in which we celebrate the birth of the world, we celebrate existence, we celebrate the natural world, creation, Tishrei Nivra Olam, we also celebrate Nisan as the Jewish New Year. I'll just add a footnote to that before we close, which is that when I was in Israel about a month ago, I got an email from Jeremy Unger from the synagogue here. He said, Rabbi, I'm confused. Why do we do Birkat HaChama in Nisan? It should be in Tishrei. If it celebrates the beginning of the solar cycle, which goes back to creation, it should be in Tishrei. Right? It's a good question.
Right?
The question is so good that the question is better than the answer. It really should be in Tishrei. But what happens is that, as in so many cases, the halakha does not take a consistent viewpoint, but rather incorporates opposing opinions in the Talmud. According to everything we learned today, Birkat HaChama is in Tishrei, and there's opinion like that in the Gemara. But the halakha goes like the opinion that contradicts everything we said today. The opinion that says that the world was created in Nisan. And therefore, Birkat HaChama is in Nisan.
And can you make an ideological conclusion from that? That it takes takes the particular versus the universal? Because of...
Yes. Uh-huh. Now, that particular aspect of halakha wipes out the universal. Mm-hmm. And it says if the Jewish people are created in Nisan, then that's our whole experience. And there is no other experience, and the whole world is to be seen in that context. But the majority opinion, at least as reflected in the literature of Rosh Hashanah, is that the world was created in Tishrei, which means we maintain that balance. Here you see a fascinating point. The halakha is not consistent, which comes to the idea of pluralism, that in our deeds, in our life, we actually maintain more than one view at the same time.
And I have a question projecting forward, because I always hear it mentioned, but I don't know completely what we are expecting to celebrate in the world to come, or when the Mashiach comes, that there are certain holidays that are going to continue, and there are certain holidays that aren't. I mean, can you draw conclusions?
I don't see the connection between that and this.
That's why I'm asking. Is there a connection?
Is there a connection? I don't think there's a connection.
I mean, what are the... Okay, because I've heard it said, certain holidays will continue and certain holidays will no longer be necessary.
Right, there's a midrash that's brought by the Rambam that says that only Purim will continue.
Only Purim.
But I see we can take what we said and say that perhaps the universal holidays should continue, but the nationalistic ones shouldn't. Anyway, I don't know of any opinion like that.
You mentioned earlier, even if you take the cycle of the Mediterranean basin, we are the only surviving ancient nation from that region anyway. So it's become particular. In other words, I don't think it's universally experienced today as maybe it was 3,000, 4,000 years ago, that Tishrei is the new year for everyone.
You're right.
And yet the lesson to us should... It brings us the lesson of universality of our obligations to the humankind, etc.
Right.
Couldn't have said it better.
Very nice.
Well, and I noted, we sometimes, being reminded that that Tishrei is the natural annual cycle that our heritage built on, reminds us that when we think of springtime as the beginning of that's when things bloom here. In other words, the beginning of our natural cycle is spring. And so we sometimes, I guess I'll take the responsibility, I would sometimes maybe say to myself, Passover's in the spring because that's the beginning of the natural cycle. That's a false statement just from where the holidays came from.
It's removed
because it's not
right.
Israel cycle.
It's European.
Where it came from. It's European or American. I mean, that's our cycle, and it's a mistaken connection.
Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah.
And then would you say that it took on new meanings as well? Like, as we were further removed from the agricultural component of Eretz Yisrael, there were other meanings that came.
That certainly has happened.
And everything.
Right. You see, discussions of Sukkot in the Middle Ages are completely disattached, disconnection from the reality of the Torah. Yeah. Should I turn off?
Yeah.